We're going to change track, as we always do every hour. I've got in front of me James Walker, and James is, I believe, he started this organisation. We're going to find out more about it. It's the Mental Health First Aid. It's training for adults, training for adults concerned for young people with mental health. So, first of all, James, welcome.
Thank you very much, Alan. That's very nice of you.
James, first of all, I've got to ask you, have you over the years been involved in mental health? I mean, what made you, James, get involved and start this organisation?
Well, let me just make a couple of points pretty quickly here.
Yep.
I didn't start Mental Health First Aid Australia. No, Mental Health First Aid Australia was started in 2000, the year 2000, right. In Canberra by two people who developed the course. And the course since then has trained about 1 million people in Australia and about 8 million people overseas.
Gee, that's pretty fair effort, isn't it?
It certainly is.
And all right, so let me just ask you, before we go on about what it is, what made you, James, get involved?
To get involved in
Mental Health First Aid.
Mental Health First Aid?
Yep.
Well, I was a psych at the Austin Hospital for a long time in the adolescent unit.
Yep.
And I trained in the United States and in Australia in youth mental health, in psychology.
So that's been, when you're working, that was your background.
Yeah.
You've been in it all the time.
Yes. And what happened since then was, or most recently, was that I've got a lot of friends who keep asking about their children.
Yep.
Does my child have ADHD, for example? I get questions like that. And so it became pretty clear to me that adults could do a great job of helping their children and their grandchildren actually weather the storm of knowing whether or not they're just going through a phase or whether this is something more serious.
Because very often grandchildren pick up more, grandparents pick up more than the parents, because the parents tend to make, not excuses, but and they tend to not sort of stand back, don't they? They're very, very involved, whereas the grandparent can often look and see a situation a bit differently, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. There's a concept of proximity bias.
Never heard of that mentioned before.
Yeah, it's a bias of proximity by the parents who because they're seeing the child from a day-to-day point of view, actually don't see the changes as dramatically as, say, a grandparent would who sees them less frequently.
All right, so we'll just go back. Right, so we now know that why James has been involved in it, because you had a history of working in it. So who set up the mental health? I know you touched on it very briefly, and why did they set it up?
Well, I think that they both came from a pretty good background in that field.
Yep.
In 2002, they decided to set it up, and the two of them in Canberra was the first course.
Yep.
And since then, it's, as I say, it's developed a great deal of following. Betty Kitchener and her husband, Tony Thorne, set it up in 2000.
So they obviously had a background in it. Did they write the course as such? Did they start it, or was it something that had existed overseas and been adapted to Australia, do you know?
No, it's entirely Australian developed.
Terrific.
It's developed on the basis of a lot of research.
Yep.
It is funded by a number of people in Australia, including the government had funded a lot of it.
Yep.
And Rotary and Beyond Blue. Basically,
I know Rotary. I'm a Rotarian.
Right. Well, Rotary and Beyond Blue both put money into it at the initial stages of it. And since then, for example, both Barack Obama and Michelle Obama have done parts of the course.
Have they?
Yes, in the United States. So it's covered about 8 million people overall.
Yeah. So let me just ask you, what do you, James, do as part of it? Do you train the parents, or you yourself? apart from being the spokesperson to come and talk to us today, what else do you do in the organisation?
I'm a licensed trainer in this, and I present the training course, which is a four-unit training course that's usually done over 2 days.
Yep.
And that course covers basically what mental health means, what the definition of mental health is, and then how adults can help young people deal with any issue that the adult may think could have a mental health issue. Not necessarily have it, but at least have a thought.
All right, so let me just expand that a little bit. So the people that come to your course are parents or grandparents?
Or any adult, any adult.
So your job, and I'm not talking about your job, James, I'm talking about the job of mental health first aid, is to train those people, to give them an insight into what it is. Do you give them things that they should look for? And then when they do find those things, you help them with what they should be doing? Is that how I...
Absolutely. A really good analogy is the lifeguard at the beach.
Yep.
Who may see somebody in the ocean who's waving.
Yep.
Now, they might be just saying hello.
Yep.
But they also might be drowning.
Yep.
So it's this waving, not drowning question. Yep. And so when we see a young person who may have may look like they are struggling.
Yep.
Most of us adults would say to ourselves, well, that's just a phase.
Yeah.
You know, they're just going through a growth phase.
Yeah, heard that.
But if they are not going through the great growth phase, and 1 in 7 young people in Australia are not going through just that phase, 1 in 7 young people in Australia do face a mental illness, what do you do about it? So the course that I teach and that Mental Health First Aid provide basically helps adults understand how to contact the child, how to make contact with them, how to communicate with them in a non-confrontal way, and then how to help them decide what to do next.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more. And we're talking to James right through till 3 o'clock. Talking to James from the Mental Health First Aid, we want to talk a bit more about what they do. But first of all, James, I hate to go back. And I'm sick of hearing about this, But COVID, mm-hmm. we all know about it. I'm sick. Well, I wish we could just leave it in the past and we went on the same. But I've interviewed a number of people since COVID. Are you finding that there has been, because I get a feeling there's been an upsurge of mental health problems with the young people. Is that true since COVID?
I don't know, frankly.
Right.
And I think the research on that would be really quite complex, I think.
Right.
So the one of the issues with COVID, though, that's most profound, I think, yep. is the fact that people were not at school and were not
yes.
at work.
Yep. And I was wondering if that sort of created a problem.
Absolutely. I think that the push to work at remotely and to communicate with everybody remotely is really quite powerful,
yeah.
and I think that has an effect,
yep.
and it's a very hard, it's not something that you can go back to. Once it's there, I think it's there forever.
And particularly in, because I was involved with a high school, but long before and even since, I mean there are a lot of young people that don't go to school and they go one day a week, and whereas they were going before, and they've lost that and I don't want to get into political statements, please. I'm not interested in talking politics on this show, but a lot of young people, they lost that interaction, didn't they?
Yes they did, yeah. And I know with corporations, for example, some corporate leaders are saying that with people working from home, the corporation loses the culture, that the culture of the organisation gets lost. And that may well translate to young people as well, that they're not at school, so that the culture that would have been developed there is not being developed now.
Mm. All right, so we can't explain 2 days of training. But if we've got people listening now that want to find out more about it, we'll get you to give us some details at about 5 to 3. But what sort of things should I and the listeners be looking for in young people?
Oh, I think the most profound lesson really in all of this is how to listen.
Right.
And that listening to what a young person is saying to you is the most fundamental issue, I think. And that's not easy for most of us. First of all, just allowing the young person to just talk without us interrupting.
Because we want to tell them what we think, don't we? Or what we think they're saying.
We certainly do. And what we think was developed by us 30 years ago.
Yeah, and further.
And further. Well, yes, yes, a great deal further in my case. And so when we were young, we were adolescents, for example, when I was young, TV had only just started. There were no mobile phones.
Yep.
And people were always together.
Yep.
And
ate the evening meal together.
That's absolutely correct.
Yep.
Families were all stable.
Yep.
For example, and today that's an entirely different.
Yep.
Different game. I mean, today years ago, if you had walked in a room and you saw a bunch of young people sitting there reading books, you would think that would look just fine. But today, if you walk into that same room and you see them all on their mobile phones, we begin to worry.
Yep.
And so it's understanding that differential that's really fundamental here.
Yep. But apart from listening to them, are there physical things that we should also be looking out for as well?
Oh, behavioural things.
Yep.
Well, in the most subtle ways, you know, if you see a young person who's just withdrawn, who is not communicating with other people, and particularly if they were once communicating with other people, and all of a sudden you see this child who is not, then I think you would say to yourself, is this just a phase?
Yeah.
You know, are they just waving like the person in the ocean? Yep. Is this a phase? Or is it worth pursuing whether or not there is something else going on?
Because I remember years ago, I remember talking to someone and I was with them on this day. It was a young person and I said to my wife, oh, gee, that kid's got it all together. And yet at another stage I was talking to them and they said, I felt like doing myself in that day.
Mm.
So they mask it, don't they?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they can mask it very well.
Yep.
Which is one of the reasons why just being able to just observe, and you might not see anything different, you know, one day. But then there may be days when you say, start to say, well, he is not playing tennis anymore, or he is, or he's not doing the normal things he used to do. And you can start saying, well, how can I intervene in this? Or how can I actually understand what's going on?
Because you've got to be very careful intervening, don't you? Because as soon as you tell a young person too much, they get the hackles up, don't they? And we all do. It doesn't only be young people.
Oh, no.
You don't want to be told how to live your life.
Yes, indeed. I think so. And it's a, this is one of the skills that mental health first aid really focuses on. How do you communicate with that young person in such a way that you are not projecting onto them your own experience from 40 years ago?
And also, you can't put on them your expectations either, can you? I know in certain instances you do. You want to keep them safe and all that, but you can't always tell them how they should be thinking either.
Absolutely not. And so that from our point of view at Mental Health First Aid, we are interested in seeing what is going on in the young person's way of presenting and the way of they're talking and so on that may suggest that you need to take it a next step. Another step.
I've got to take a quick break, James, and I should mention to the listeners at about 2:55, James will give you contact details to find out more about the organisation, what emails or Facebooks or whatever he's got. So have a paper and pencil ready about 2:55, and we'll be and James will be able to give you more details. Now, James, earlier in the discussion, quite early in the discussion, you said that you, I think it's four different units that it covers, and over a couple of days. So I know you can't, you're not going to be able to cover everything here and now, but what's the sort of things that you cover in your courses?
Well, the one of the approaches is to, one of the modules is to talk about how do you approach the person, how do you assess what's going on, and that requires you to have some knowledge of what mental health is in the first
yes.
place, what are the indicators of various difficulties of mental health, anxiety, depression, eating disorders and so on, what are the indicators of some of those things,
yep.
even though we're not diagnosing. Technically, we're not technically diagnosing
yep.
anything. We're just normal adults having a look, saying, well, that looks like it could be more
yep.
than just a fad.
Yep.
That looks like it could be an eating disorder.
Yep.
So that it helps helps us identify that. And then we need to know how to give support properly.
Yep.
And being able to encourage the person to get support if they need it, and then which sort of support would help them the most.
Like, James, can I just ask you, and I totally agree with you say suggesting support, with mental health, and you're the professional, is it like an alcoholic, you can't help them until they acknowledge they've got a problem? Are they likely to push you away and say, I know, you know, what are you, silly old man, trying to tell me? or does a person with a mental health issue understand that, hey, I've got an issue and this person's trying to help me?
Well, it's a combination of all of
that. I knew you were going to say that.
but you certainly can't help some. You certainly can't get people into a situation of getting them help if
yep.
they don't want it,
yep.
unless there's a high risk to them.
Yes,
and
yep.
then yep. you can, obviously.
Yep.
And then we talk about that in the mental health course. So we describe the various difficult areas in mental health, the various anxiety, the depression
yep.
and so on, eating disorders. We then assess the sort of help that would be required, and it may be gradual. It
yep.
may be if you're not actually sure about what's going on for this kid, you might suggest that they just go for a walk, or that
yep.
they join the tennis club or
yep.
something like that. If it looks like it's more serious or it develops more seriously, then you would go further with it. And then
yep.
you would, obviously talking to parents, if you're not the parent, you obviously
yep.
you need to know how to do that and how to do that without making a situation even worse.
Because you've got to make sure you do it without judgment, don't you?
Without judgment and with the recognition that there may be resistance by the people that you talk to about it
right.
too. Yeah. So how do you manage that? And then the encouragement of the young person to actually look after themselves by getting help, and if it's as if it's as straightforward and early on as just saying go for a walk, and then helping them do that, you
yep.
know, encouraging that work.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So mainly, I mean, I know you're talking to parents and grandparents, but you're talking about young people in this program, aren't you?
Well, I am, yes.
Yep.
Mental Health First Aid deals with a number of different courses.
Oh, do they?
Adults, there's a two-day course for adults helping other adults.
Right.
For example,
yep.
there's a two-day course for teenagers helping teenagers, and then one for older people helping older people
right.
as well, or young, you know, adults helping older yeah. people.
So can I just ask, this group, Mental Health First Aid Australia, it's not about helping the young person themselves, is it's about the parents and the grandparents. You're trying to train them rather than, you don't necessarily get involved with the young people. Am I right with that?
Well, you're helping the adult.
Yep.
Help the young person.
Yep.
Yes, that's the issue.
Yep.
Yes.
Now I understand that, but I just didn't think that you actually do it on a thing. So, how many, like, when we're talking about mental health issues, like, what? How many people are we talking about? Like, is there a percentage of the population? Well, there would be.
Struggling with mental health.
Yes.
Oh, well, as I said, there's one in seven young people.
One in seven.
One in seven have had a difficulty. There's something on the order of. There's something on the order of in 2017, for example, 14% of 18 and 24 year olds had a mental health issue.
Gee, that's high.
There's 14% in 2017.
Yeah.
In 2020, that number had risen to 22%.
And that still doesn't take in the COVID years, does it?
No, it doesn't.
So that's going to be high.
That's exactly right. The anxiety in Australian kids from 18 to 24, there were a diagnosable. This is the people who've got an official diagnosis.
Oh, yeah, we're not talking about necessarily who could be. You're talking about the ones that are officially diagnosed. Yeah.
Absolutely. 278,000 had anxiety disorder, which is nearly 7%
of
those kids, absolutely. Yeah. In terms of ADHD, there was 7.4%, which is 290,000.
So we're talking a lot of young people there, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Can I just ask you this? Would and then I've got to take a break. When a young person is diagnosed or they have them, and those numbers are horrific, are some of those going to grow out of it, or are we talking that without medical and other intervention, those numbers are still going to go through with them right through life? If that makes sense to you,
as well. Well, that's a very complicated question, and it relates a lot to the cause of the issue,
right.
And how the issue is actually dealt with.
Yep.
For example, some issues which are environmentally determined, for example, can be resolved with the proper treatment. And certainly an awful lot of pathologies can be managed with the correct treatment, even though they may not be removed completely.
Yep.
Some of the psychoses, for example.
I guess the I probably didn't explain it very well. One of the things, what I was trying to get at, if it's undiagnosed or it is diagnosed and nothing is done about it, it's not going to get any better, is it?
Not usually, no.
Yeah. No. So the point I'm trying to make to people who are listening and is that if people do have a suspicion, they should be doing something about it because undiagnosed, it's not going to get better, is it?
Undiagnosed, this can, at a young person's age, it can affect the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
And not only in psychological terms, but also in social terms. If you're going through life continuously anxious, for example, it's going to affect the rest of your life.
Yep.
Affect your friends, how you relate to people, and so on.
And you could also become very withdrawn too, couldn't you?
Absolutely.
And therefore, you don't have these people around you.
No, that anxiety actually morphs itself into depression.
Yeah. I've got to take a quick break and then we're going to be back with more.
About 17, big and strong, playing my favorite song, and I could tell it wouldn't be long. The hills with me, yeah, me, and I could tell it wouldn't be long. The hills with me. Cause it's all the same. So can I take you home where we can be alone? And next we're moving on. He was with me, yeah, me. Next we're moving on. He was with me, yeah.
be moving on and singing at some old song. Yeah, with me singing.
Again, I'll just remind everybody, and I'm just reminding James, at about 2:55, we'll give you all the contact details where you can find out more about the organisation and then obviously do something about it. James, what would you say to people? This is a bit of a sales pitch. People who are listening to us right now who have some suspicions, think, oh, you know, my child might be this, they might be that, or they might be a grandparent, probably, I'd suggest, probably more grandparents this time of the day. What would your take away from this interview to them be?
Well, I think without having done the mental health first aid course, your best option would be to talk to your GP.
So you'd go there first?
Absolutely. Because being able to sort of assess, you need to be able to assess what changes that you've actually observed in the child, or the young person, or anybody for that matter. What changes in their behaviour have you observed? If you ask them, if you talk to them and can bring up that change, like, I noticed that you're not playing tennis anymore, and they can't give you a good answer for that or whatever, then you may be saying what other aspect of their life has changed as well.
Let me just ask you, is it the local GP, he has to do everything. Like, you go there with a sore thumb, he's got it to it, and right through to cancer and all that. Are the local GPs able to do all this, or are we asking a lot of GPs?
We're asking a lot of GPs, but so we should, really.
Yep.
And I think that if you have a doubt, if you have a serious doubt about a young person or anybody that is struggling, other than just asking them about what's going on for them, beyond that, then I would basically be saying you've got to go to the GP and say, what do you think?
When I grew up, and this is a long while ago, but when you were between 16 and 20, everybody just assumed you were stupid and you were just a boy and you'll settle down. Is that perception still out there, or are we now sort of taking a lot more notice of people? Because I can remember we all did some stupid things, and you look back now and you think, oh, but people just thought, oh, he's been stupid. So people still got that attitude, or are people starting to think, oh, no, we need to look at this a bit?
Oh, I think that there is still that attitude.
Particularly with boys.
Yeah, absolutely with boys. there are, for example, in behaviours, there are about 27 behaviours identified by the Psychiatric Diagnostic Service that have got an association with ADHD.
Right.
Now, there are 27 of those behaviours, and they're is things simply like not paying attention, right? Now, I don't know a kid that at one stage or another doesn't vary in their attention span.
I had my teacher say a couple of times, you don't pay attention.
Yeah, well, it's definitely not news to me. And then some kids are, being over-talkative is another one of the DSM criteria, the diagnostic criteria. The question is, though, the way it's formulated by a psychiatrist or a GP would be to look at those sorts of behaviours in combination. How many of those behaviours does this young person have?
Not just
not just
he
one
doesn't
or two.
Pay attention at school.
No.
Or yeah.
Yeah, well, we all don't pay attention at school at some point. So that those behaviours have to be occur simultaneously, and many of them have to occur at the same time over a certain period of time. And there's a rigorous diagnosis for that. And the people who can do that rigorous diagnosis are GPs and psychiatrists and psychologists.
James, I'll ask you this. You might not want to even answer it, and I understand that. I've been reading of late that there is a huge increase of young people with ADHD. Mm. Is that because we under-diagnosed years ago, or is it just for some reason there's a bigger problem?
I think there's a that is, I think, an enormously good question.
Right.
And it's a question that a number of people are paying attention to.
Yep.
Is it that the fact that it's being reported now?
Yep.
Is it the fact that adults, parents and others are seeing one or two of those behaviours and assuming that the kid's ADHD?
Yep.
Without the rigour of the formal diagnosis?
Yep.
We're fortunate now because the GPs are being trained in the identification of ADHD, and that will help a great deal in this.
Right. I've got to take a quick break. Now, have your paper and pencil ready, particularly if you know some young person or you believe you know some young person. It's well worth getting hold of James or have a look at James's program and maybe book yourselves in and get involved in it and just see where it goes. So James will give you all those details in about 3.5 minutes' time.
In a bar in Toledo, across from the depot, on a bar stool, she took off her ring. I thought I'd get closer, so I walked on over. I sat down and asked her her name. When the drinks finally hit her, she said, I'm no quitter, but I finally quit living on dreams. I'm hungry for laughter and here ever after. I'm after whatever the other life brings. In the mirror I saw him, and I closely watched him. I thought how he looked out of place. He came to the woman who sat there beside me. He had a strange look on his face. The big hands were calloused. He looked like a mountain. For a minute I thought I was dead. But he started shaking. His big heart was breaking. He turned to the woman and said, you picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille. With four hungry children and a crop in the sad times, but this time you're hurting won't heal. You picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille. After he left us, I ordered more whiskey. I thought how she'd made him look small. From the lights of the bar room to a rented hotel room, we walked without talking at all. She was a beauty, but when she came to me, she must have thought I'd lost my mind. I couldn't hold her, but the words that he told her kept coming back time after time. You picked a fine time to leave me, Lucy. Children and a crop in the field. I've had some bad times, lived through some sad times. This time you're hurting won't heal. You picked a fine time to leave me, Lucy.
picked a fine time to leave me, Lucy. Four long children and a crop in the field. I've had some bad times, lived through some sad times. This time you hurt and won't heal.
Just a quick reminder, I'll be back on Sunday afternoon between 12 and 3 with music, memories and more, and then I'll be back Sunday night between 6 and 8 with a rock and roll hit parade. Plenty of great music, I believe, coming up on Sunday. If you love 60s, from 50s to 70s on Sunday between 12 and 3, and if you love 6 to 8, 60s rock and roll will be in here on Sunday night, rocking away. Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk to James. James, how are people going to find out more about your organisation and find out when you're presenting?
Right. The very best way of finding out a lot about Mental Health First Aid is to go on the Mental Health First Aid website,
which
is simply mentalhealthfirstaidaustralia.com.au.
Right.
That will bring that up. And it's an excellent website. It's got videos. It's first class piece of work.
Right. So then, if people want to go further, how do they find out, or how do they get involved with one of your groups?
Well, in my case,
yep.
My website, which is jameswalker.net.au,
yeah,
has got
can I just
details?
James Walker, that's just one word.
That's one word. Yep. Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
I often mumble it too, so it's just James Walker. jameswalker.net.au.
Yep.
And I've got details there about how to contact me for the courses that we're running. We are running one course in Hillsville on the 26th and 27th.
That's of March?
Of March this month. Hosted by the Lions group in Hillsville.
G'day, Gary, and all the mob out there in the Lions op shop.
Yes, hello, Gary. It was a lovely lunch, thanks.
he's never shouted me a lunch.
He's very nice. And I've got, in that space, I've got, I can take 8 people at no cost
and
for
no
the
cost.
2 days.
I should have asked you, for the people that don't get into that, what sort of cost is involved, James?
The cost varies a little bit depending on the number of people that are there, but it would run in the region of about $220 for the 2 days.
That's not a lot.
No.
Well, and now, when you say 2 days, I should just sort of clarify this. Are you talking Saturday and Sunday? Because I haven't looked up that date. Yeah. And is it all day, or you're talking? What are you talking?
Well, the great thing about Mental Health First Aid is that they have options about this. So, in the case of the 26th and 27th, that's a Thursday and a Friday, and that's all day each day. Well,
yep.
7 hours each day.
Yep.
However, you can also do the first day online.
Yes.
Yep. And
because you're thinking not everyone can take Thursday and Friday off.
That's right. So you can do the first day online in some courses, and in other ways you can break the 2 days into 4 modules, so you can do half days.
Can you?
So it's quite flexible.
If you came along, we'll say the 26th, they've done it online. We've just got to take a quick call. Sorry about that. If you did the 26th online, so the 20th, we'll say they came into you for half a day on the 27th, so then where would they do the other half?
Well, that would have to be arranged. The 26th and the 27th are simply 2 days next to each other. There's no change in that. But you can we can offer courses that actually do exactly what you're saying.
Yep.
That stagger the days, stagger the units across the 4 days.
Yep. And how much of it can be done online? Like you said, the first day of this one could be done online.
Yeah.
How much of the 2 days can be done online? Is it only the 1 day?
The 1 day, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so then the other one needs to be up front.
Yes, that's correct. Yep. Yeah, that's right. Mm.
So I guess we're fast running out of time. What do you want people to take away from this? If they, well, first of all, to contact the mental health first aid, did you say?
Yeah, mental health first aid website is first class. Yep. It's excellent. It explains what mental health first aid does really very well. Yep. It's very well put together. It's a massively well-researched organisation. And as I said earlier, it's trained 8 million people around
Terrific.
The world. Much more microscopic is my website, which is yep. jameswalker.net.au. And if you go in there and have a look at the 26th to the 27th date, you can enrol for that.
Yep. And there's eight free.
This is free. Eight positions free.
Yep.
And also just put your name and name and email down, and I'll send you the other events as they arise.
Yep. Mm. All right. So the other thing is, and I've got to go, the news has just turned up. First, just very quickly, what do they bring? Just themselves and a notepad?
A notepad's a good idea. But I'll provide a little pencil.
Yeah. No worries. I've got to go, unfortunately. James, been great having you in. Mm-hmm. I hope we fill those eight positions really quick. And really, look, if you know someone that's struggling, a young person, don't put it off, because as James said, it's not going to get any better.
That's right. Thank you very much, Alan.
Thanks, James. Bye.
Bye.